Okay, is there, we have people signed up to talk to us on this one? I see we have one amendment. Are there two amendments on this? Am I missing something? Okay, thank you. First person speaking to it is Katie Fast from the Oregon Cattlemen's Association. Morning, Katie.
Good morning, Chair Jensen, members of the committee. For the record, Katie Fast, representing the Oregon Cattlemen. We request the passage of 2887 with the dash two amendments. This bill will put into Oregon statute the federal definitions or the federal definition of point source, and also a definition of non-point source to add clarification and distinguish the two for Oregon. The point source definition has met the approval of the Department of Environmental Quality. There are two areas in 468B where non-point source and point source are addressed. The first is dealing with total maximum daily loads, or TMDLs. The department is allowed to impose and enforce limitations or other controls which may include TMDLs, waste load allocations for point sources, and load allocations for non-point sources. This is a concern to the agriculture community as the TMDL process moves forward, and we would like the clarification for the load establishments. The other area where non-point source is used is in the groundwater contaminant areas, which are determined as a result of non-point source activities and pollution contaminants due to that. The reason the cattlemen are bringing this bill today is just to bring clarity to the definitions and consistency with the federal law, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions for Katie? Representative Dingfelder.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Katie. I'm just trying to clarify between some information that's in your testimony and some information that's in the measure summary. Maybe I'm just reading this incorrectly. I don't know if
just I have not seen the measure summary.
I'll just paraphrase it for you. The measure summary says that the definitions, as you mentioned, are to be the same in the Clean Water Act and what you're proposing in legislation as drafted. However, as drafted, as the bill is drafted, the definition for point pollution is missing some key elements of the Clean Water Act. And I'm sure we're probably going to be hearing from these agencies, Department of Ag and Department of or DEQ, but can you just discuss why those were left out in the drafting?
Representative Dingfelder and Chair Jensen, that is why we brought forth the dash two amendments. It was just a misclarification on our part. We did not have any intent to slip something by, or that's why we have the dash two amendments and why we're not supporting the dash ones as well, because they are not consistent with the Federal Clean Water Act.
Okay, and do we have both the dash one and the dash twos?
Dash two.
Dash two. Okay. All right, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Anything else for Katie?
Thank you.
Thank you. Reverend Mike Llewellyn from the Department of Environmental Quality. Good morning, Mike. Here's the day.
Okay, thank you.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Mike Llewellyn. I'm Administrator of the Water Quality Division with DEQ. DEQ opposes House Bill 2887 as drafted. I have not personally seen the amendments, although my understanding is that the dash two amendments would mirror the federal definition. If that's the case, then we're fine with that amendment as long as it comports with federal law. be glad to answer any questions, Mr. Chair.
We are trying to arrange to get you a copy of the Dash 2s as we speak.
I have one question.
Sure. Representing color.
Thank you. Give, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mike a half a second to organize himself after looking.
Mr. Chair, I forgot to give you my testimony, too.
Okay.
I
mean.
Mr. Chair, these appear to be fine.
Thank you. Representing Pelk.
I just had a question, Mike, because I didn't get a chance to look at the rules before the hearing. Are these definitions defined anywhere in DEQ's rulemaking authority? I mean, do you have these definitions currently in rule, the agency? Or do you, did you not see it necessary and you just go by the federal? I mean, I'm trying to figure out, is this absolutely necessary for us to have in Oregon statutes, or do we already have it through rule, and why we would need it in Oregon statutes? That's one of the things I'm just trying to figure out.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dingfelder, I don't know if we have specific definitions in our rules. I'll definitely follow up on that for you. In terms of the need to have the mirroring of the two definitions in statute, it may be redundant in the sense of, I know that in 468B, and I can't provide the exact site, there's a provision that says that DEQ shall administer the Clean Water Act, shall administer the act pursuant to federal definition. So that may, from a statutory construction basis, just be redundant. But again, we don't have any objection to having the exact definitions that mirror the Clean Water Act in state statute if it's necessary for clarification.
Okay, thank you.
Other questions for Mike? Thank you, Mike.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
I'm going to ask invite Brendan McCarthy, Legislative Counsel for the natural resource issues. We had some question with the drafting of the amendments, I believe, and I'd like to have some explanation from Legislative Counsel for what they did and what they didn't do.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Brendan McCarthy, Deputy Legislative Counsel, for the record. I guess this puts me in an interesting spot. I don't obviously oppose or support the amendment, but I do have some concerns with a couple of issues surrounding the amendments. The first is that while non-point source and point source are terms that are used in federal statute, and Mr. Llewellyn is correct in that 468B035 tells the state, tells the EQC to perform or cause to be performed any acts necessary to implement the Federal Clean Water Act, point source and non-point source are just not terms that we use in Oregon revised statutes. Point source is used a total of one time, and that's in Chapter 454 relating to sewage disposal. Different than the Clean Water Act, we do not talk about regulating point sources. We talk about requiring a permit for discharging pollutants into the waters of the state. And we have, I don't know whether it was an intentional act on our part when we passed these statutes to avoid the use of point source or not, but we carefully structured our statutes, I think, in a manner that does avoid that term. And as far as adding definitions to statutes where we don't use the term, our office just doesn't think that's particularly beneficial to the statutes. There are concerns as well that I have with the way the federal law is written that does not exactly conform to our understanding of how we should draft clear definitions. And while there may be a particularly good reason to conform our statute exactly to the way the federal law is written, that brings up a whole host of other issues. Number one, the federal law could change. Number two, what if the federal law actually is written very poorly. And for example, I just the way the federal law is written, if I can just read from the definition, and if the committee will bear with me just for a second. It says the term point source means any discernible, confined, and discrete conveyance, including but not limited to pipe, ditch, channel, tunnel, etc. That sentence ends, and then it says this term does not include agricultural stormwater discharges and return flows from irrigated agriculture. Now, if someone could explain to me why we've defined something that with the first sentence refers specifically to things that carry water, pipes, ditches, canals. And then in the second sentence, we talk about the actual discharge, the water in those pipes. Well, logically, I read that definition, and why would return flows from agriculture be included in the definition of a point source? It's a flow, not a source. So could the definition be improved? And I think the answer is probably yes, but not if the goal is to conform directly to federal law. So there are questions that I can come up with relating to this definition, and I think that the definition could be improved for clarity, but I'm not going to stand in the way of what the committee wants to adopt.
Any questions for Brendan, Representative Shoffler?
Thank you. What do we have to lose if we do this? I mean, would you please just speculate on what we have to lose? What bad could happen, good could happen if this happens? I mean, does this leave us open for lawsuits or any kind of grief?
Mr. Chair, Representative Shoffler, no, I don't think it does. I guess this is more from a desire to that we pass laws that hopefully do something. Mm-hmm. And in this case, I'm not sure what it is that we're accomplishing. If the department has a definition of point source and non-point source in their rules, they may be required to conform that to what the statute says. There may be a benefit in that area. Mm-hmm. But from a purely statutory standpoint, I don't think we have anything to lose and not much to gain either. So,
thank you.
When we're dealing with the with federal agency and an agency that has, in fact, a very large hammer and has used that hammer, I might say not so judiciously, in the state of Oregon and the Northwest. Even though the federal statutes that regulate them may, in the opinion of the best legal counsel that we have, you know, in our building here for the legislature, be poorly written, vague and ambiguous, or whatever other terms we might use with it. What options do we have if subsequently they disagree with our definitions, as they are prone to do? I understand what you're saying, but I'm trying to understand what the folks who brought the bill to me, you know, for the Cattlemen's Association. You know where they want to go with it, so I'm looking at trying to resolve this, I guess, Brendan, and appreciate your efforts to try to have good, clean, tight legislation. Maybe that's not a question you can answer, but a question the chair is wrestling with right now.
Mr. Chair, if I can try and wrestle with an answer, I think that I'm not certain the motivations behind moving this legislation as well. Maybe I should talk with the cattlemen to understand to a greater extent what it is they're trying to accomplish.
We'll bring them back in a minute and find out what they may have on mind on that.
I guess I'll just leave it at that. If I did know some more motivation behind it, perhaps I could come up with something that met their goals.
Thank you, Brendan. Thanks. I appreciate it very much. And in light of the latitude that the chair is taking with this, I'm inclined to close the public hearing and open a work session on this, where I have more latitude as to what is said and perhaps how we. I have a question for the committee administrator. We don't have to move it or not move it. I mean, we can close the work session and reopen it, can't we?
Yeah, we haven't gotten a work session over. We can't close the work session without doing as long as nobody makes a motion.
We don't have to hear the motion,
everybody.
Mr. Craig from Department of Agriculture, and I've asked him to, and I am going to close the public hearing and open a work session on this in order to give me a little more latitude as to, you know, what we do with and to calling witnesses or calling people back up. So thank you very much, Chuck, for being here. I know you were expressing some concerns, and I'd like you to share those with us.
Thank you for recognizing me, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Chuck Craig. I'm the Deputy Director for the Oregon Department of Agriculture, and I had not intended to testify on this bill initially, but one of the things that enters my mind that gives me some pause about it is that it introduces the term concentrated animal feeding operation into a definition of point source. And in the state statutes that regulate CAFOs, we use the term confined animal feeding operation. And that statute then allows or directs the department to define those operations that are required to have a permit and be regulated because they discharge according to rule. So I see the possibility here, not having had a lot of time to think about this and have legal counsel analyze it, of a disjunct between the state definition of CAFO and the way that the law would be amended, and I'm wondering if this is such a good idea without thinking completely through it. I did not really intend to say anything about this initially, but it just occurred to me that there is sort of a disjunct here, and I don't know that anybody's thought about it. So
I thank you, Chuck, and I do appreciate that you hadn't, and you're basically coming up with my request, and I appreciate that very much. And committee will recognize that there wasn't prepared testimony on the part of Chuck, for that. I'd like to have Katie come back up, if you would, please, Katie. And there seems to be one. Oh, excuse me. Are there questions for me?
Yes. Well, I guess
sit
Chuck.
Sit down.
Stay where you are, Chuck.
Sit down.
So, what difference do you see between confined and concentrated?
Well, in our rules, Mr. Chair, Representative Tomei, in our rules, we've defined a CAFO, a confined animal feeding operation, to include all of the operations that meet the federal definition, plus all the operations that met the old state definition. And so what I'm wondering about is whether the way the bill is written, if it might have the effect of deregulating those operations that met the old state definition. because the federal definition and the state definition are very different in terms of their description of what you're looking at to determine whether or not it needs a permit. In the federal definition, it starts with a term called an AFO, an animal feeding operation, has to confine for 45 days or more on a surface without vegetation. And then from that point on, you go to another series of tests that bring in the number of animals that are confined there and whether or not there's contact with the waters of the United States and so on to end up with a final determination as to whether an operation qualifies for requiring a permit. In the state definition, it basically says if you have a wastewater handling system, and you confine for 4 months or more either in buildings or on an improved surface, you're a CAFO that needs a permit. And I'm kind of concerned here that what might be happening is a definition being inserted in the statute that doesn't encompass the old state CAFOs in the definition of point source, and therefore may actually run contrary to legislative intent last session, which was to keep those operations under regulated as point sources under the law. And I'm just asking a question here. I haven't had a chance to talk to legal counsel or anything, and I didn't really intend to speak in opposition to the bill, but it occurs to me that this is a potential hang-up.
Thank you, Jack. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, thank you, Chair.
Mr. Chair, may I ask a question?
Representative Schaffer. I know you're not prepared, and maybe the Cattlemen Association can answer this, too, so I'll ask both of you. Can anybody explain to me the difference between the word concentrated animal feeding operation and confined? Concentrated versus confined. I think that's the crux of the problem here.
Concentrated animal feeding operation is a federal term used in the federal regulations and in the Clean Water Act. Confined is a state term used in state law, state statute. Concentrated animal feeding operation under the federal law is been defined by the federal equivalent of administrative rule, the CFRs that are in effect equivalent to administrative rule at the state level, to be a livestock operation that first is a so-called animal feeding operation, which means that there's more than one animal confined for a period of 45 days or more on a surface that is unvegetated. And then if that animal feeding operation has certain numbers of animals, for instance, if it has over 1,000 cows, for example, it's automatically a CAFO. If it has between 300 and 1,000, there are some other parameters that you have to evaluate. Do the waters of the United States flow through the operation, and do the animals have direct contact with the waters of the United States? If they do, then it is a CAFO, a concentrated animal feeding operation. If the operation has the potential to discharge through a man-made conveyance, it is a concentrated animal feeding operation. So if it has a system that's open to the weather for distributing manure to cropland, then it has the potential to discharge in all likelihood, and it becomes a federally defined CAFO. And then there's a catch-all for operations that are specially designated that don't meet those two criteria, but there's a series of tests that either the EPA regional administrator or the state department director with administrative oversight of the program can specially designate any operation as a CAFO if it meets those tests. A confined animal feeding operation under the old state law and according to the definition in the Department of Agriculture's administrative rules is one that where animals without any number specification are confined on an improved surface, not an unvegetated surface necessarily, but an improved one, for 4 months or more, and the operation has a wastewater handling system, a system for handling manure in a liquid state and then subsequently treating it or using it on cropland or whatever the case is. So, I mean, if you look at this in terms of those Venn diagrams where you have the circles that, you know, show the part that's intersecting is where the two definitions coincide, and then the other parts of the circle are where they don't. There's a group of operations in the universe that satisfy both definitions. And then there are some that meet only the federal definition, and there's some that meet only the state definition. And the purpose of the statute, House Bill 2156, that was passed in the last session was to bring all of those together under one umbrella and continue on with a program that met state the old state requirements, but also satisfied EPA in terms of meeting federal requirements. And so, you know, what I'm pointing out here is that we're using a term in this statute now, in this definition, that's a different word than what we're using in the statutes that are specific to confined animal feeding operations, and that difference has meaning.
That's one more follow-up. Okay, how many in the universe that wouldn't be in the middle and wouldn't meet the federal, but would meet the state, that you are afraid that would be deregulated if we adopted this as written and amended? How many operations are we talking about in Oregon? Do you have a ballpark? Maybe it's a small.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, Representative Shoffar, I think I can give you an idea. Not sure I can give you an exact number, but I can certainly discuss the magnitude of it with you. There are about 500 currently permitted confined animal feeding operations. We have not yet started to permit the operations that meet the federal definition, but of those 500 that meet the old state definition, more than half of them are smaller dairies that do not meet the federal definition because of the number. So,
thank you very much.
Katie, very quickly, I'd like to ask you, what's the motivation for the group that you represent?
Once again, for the record, Katie Fast, Oregon Cattlemen's. Chair Jensen, the point source is defined by the federal government, and we use in statute in 468B.110 point source and non-point source regarding TMDLs. No one has ever in statute said what a non-point source is, the federal government or the state. We believe that there needs to be a clarification as we move forward with the TMDL process and loads are established for both point sources and non-point sources. That clarification is going to need to be more important as that process moves forward. And I'd be happy to work with Chuck Craig Craig and also DEQ on trying to clarify the confined animal and concentrated animal discussion, and possibly maybe there's a way we can include both in the definition, but I need to talk to DEQ's counsel as well.
Okay. Colleagues, I'm going to close the work session on this now, and I am going to ask the Department of Environmental Quality and Department of Agriculture, because there seems to be some issues here that you need to work out, or we need to have an understanding of. I do want to suggest for the committee that in the last session of the legislature, there wasn't a major bill that we worked very hard on, not in this committee, but in Representative Krupp's committee on, well, in fact, we had a joint hearing with his committee on last time, having to do with this issue of CAFO, AFO, and trying to move some of the enforcement away from EPA and over to the Department of Agriculture, and I think we reached some kind of an agreement, is that correct, with the Environmental Protection Agency. One of the things that we certainly don't want to do at this point, and one of the questions I would ask of both departments and ask of legal counsel, maybe you know, from your agencies to consider as to whether or not any changes we might be making here would put that agreements that we reached in jeopardy. I mean, that's one of the things. And additionally, to try to resolve any of the kind of concerns that might be, you know, that you brought up, Chuck, and that Mike has discussed, and of course your concerns, Katie, with it. So, if I can do that and ask you all to take a look at that and get back to me when you have a an understanding one way or another, you know, with it, the chair would be very appreciative, and it will save the committee from having to, you know, try to dig through things and learn more about something that they probably want to know. Thank you very much, all of you, on this. And we will close the work session then on House Bill 2887 and open a public hearing on House Bill 3047.
House Bill 3047 establishes state policy on wastewater reuse, directs Department of Environmental Quality to report to 73rd Legislative Assembly on wastewater reuse potential, directs Department to seek federal funding for demonstration project, sunsets January 2nd, 2006.
The student Portland is here, and they have a PowerPoint presentation, so I don't know if they can bring
it. They brought it, fine. I see if they brought it, fine.
I think they did, but I'm not sure.
Okay, we've got quite a few here.
These two are together.
Oh, okay. All right. Is this your bill, Representative?
Yeah.
First off, I'm going to ask Representative Dingfelter, who is not signed up, but who is sitting here beside me, to explain what her motivation is in this bill and what the bill is about.
Thanks.
And then we'll just go down the line on the sign-up sheet as such. If you could briefly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. The next, actually, three bills that are before you, I'm a co-sponsor on with Senator Ringo, who I'm not sure if he's going to be able to make it here to testify, because I think he's got his own Water Committee meeting this morning. But the intent of the next three bills is to really look at water conservation as a tool for increasing our water resources in the state. And the first one that you're going to see is specifically addresses wastewater. And just a little bit of background, I served on the regional water supply plan team for many years as a citizen representing the city of Portland neighborhoods, and worked on looking at how we can expand the use of existing water resources in the metro area. And wastewater was an area that we looked at quite a bit, and as a resource, and were we fully utilizing gray water is sort of the term also used for this resource. And so it came to me that we don't really have a policy at the state level. It is a resource that I believe, and many members of the committee believe, should be looked at the same time when we're looking at developing new resources as well. And given that we have, as you've heard from many of the agencies that have come before us, we have very limited new water available in the state. We're looking at how we can store more water, how we can transfer water between water users. So the intent of this bill is just to look at wastewater as another option, and basically to put together recommendations for the next legislative session. And you're going to hear more. DEQ will be coming up. The city of Portland with some specific examples. So that's the intent. This is not regulatory in nature. There's no mandates. I think we have pretty broad support on this bill. I've been working with stakeholders, and I'm hoping that we can move forward with this. This would not hopefully cost the state money, because we are going to be looking for a federal grant in order to implement that. So I'm going to stop there. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative. And at this point, we would like to ask Mike Llewellyn and Adam Sussman and Willie Tiffany if you can come up as a... And I don't know, you're all indicated on the same position on this, but the reason for this is try to expedite the time. And I would suggest that we've got 1 hour till the bell rings, and we're looking at four bills, so you've got a very limited amount of time.
So talk fast.
Talk fast. Mike.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, again, for the record, my name is Mike Llewellyn, Administrator of the Water Quality Division with DEQ. DEQ supports House Bill 3047. We strongly support it. Wastewater, as you may know, for up until this time, is still considered a liability in terms of management because it has a cost associated with its treatment, and obviously the impacts of where it's discharged are of a concern. What we are hoping and trying to do at DEQ is to turn that culture around and for people to look at wastewater now as an economic asset. With more stringent treatment requirements coming because of the broader use of wastewater in the state and not a lot of assimilative capacity left in our streams, many dischargers are treating wastewater now to such a high degree that it is close to being the quality that it can be used for drinking water. However, we know that people aren't ready to go there yet in terms of drinking water out of a wastewater treatment plant, but certainly using water for supplementing our drinking water supplies for things like cooling water, industrial processes, golf courses, irrigation of land, urban landscaping, etc., is certainly the wave of the future. This is not new. The southwest part of our country uses wastewater to a great degree in this fashion, and we'd like to see that promoted here in Oregon. So with that, I strongly support the bill and be glad to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mike. Adam.
Yes, good morning. For the record, Adam Sussman. I'm the legislative coordinator for the Water Resources Department, and the department does support House Bill 3047. Just for quick hit information, the department does administer a number of programs that allow the reuse of wastewater, and as many as 150,000 acres in the state of Oregon are currently irrigated with wastewater. As Representative Dingfelder pointed out, the reuse of water can be an important element in a strategy to have a diverse, multiple source approach to meeting the state's needs for new water supply. The Water Resources Resources Department and DEQ have been communicating on this issue on a regular basis, and in fact, at a joint meeting between our commissions, it was a main topic of discussion. We look forward to continuing the dialogue with DEQ and stakeholders on this important issue. Thank you.
Thank you. Willie.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, I'm Willie Tiffany with the League of Oregon Cities, and we also support House Bill 3047. As was stated earlier, municipalities are actively looking for reuse opportunities for two reasons. One, to lessen their withdrawals of water and actively conserve the limited amount of resource we have in terms of water quantity, and then also to limit our discharges. As Mr. Llewellyn talked about, there are many innovative reuse opportunities out there, and we are actively seeking to implement those here in the state of Oregon. So with that, I'd like to thank Representative Dingfelder for introducing this bill and working with us on this, and we look forward to exploring this issue in the interim. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions? Okay, thank you, gentlemen. Next, I'm going to call up Greg Acker and Susan Snyder from the City of Portland.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to comment this morning. My name is Susan Snyder of the City of Portland Office of Government Relations. And so to keep this brief, I would just like to introduce Greg Acker with our Office of Sustainable Development to tell you about our support for this bill.
Thank you. Chair Jensen, members of the committee, thank you for allowing me to speak in support of House Bill 3047. I strongly encourage you to support
it. Can you just state your name?
I'm sorry.
Please.
Greg Acker, A-C-K-E-R. I'm an architect with the Office of Sustainable Development, City of Portland.
Thank you.
And I strongly support our office, the Office of Sustainable Development, along with the Water Bureau and the Bureau of Environmental Services, strongly supports House Bill 3047. We feel that the waste water should be used in its highest and best use. Potable water is great for cooking and drinking, but wastewater we can really use for some of the other functions such as flushing toilets and for irrigation. We're doing a lot of, we feel like from a cost standpoint it's less costly both environmentally and monetarily to conserve water and to develop technologies to use wastewater. We have several incentives out in the Portland and programs in City of Portland and programs supporting technologies to collect rainwater, which is allowed to be collected off of all rooftops of houses, and to develop wastewater strategies using gray water. We're also showing doing demonstration projects in City of Portland for high-rises to collect rainwater and to flush toilets. So irrigation and toilet flushing is just a no-brainer for stormwater. We have sort of an inspiration by the state of California. They have a gray water guide in about 1994. Because of their drought, they realized that they had to really use gray water for irrigation and toilet flushing, and this guide is allowing subsurface irrigation using gray water, which avoids any DEQ issues with potential pathogens on the surface or in vegetable gardens. We feel that it's a conservation of water, and these new technologies will allow us to avoid some of the costly infrastructure of increasing the supply of demand to water of water, particularly in the summer in Portland, where the water supply system is really is stressed to its max. And gray water could be sort of married with rainwater during the winter. Gray water in the summer, we could really reduce the demand for potable water for those uses. We know it's a complex issue. We'd like to work with you as your partner with DEQ to develop the technologies and the regulations and the code issues that could make this occur. And we have got a pretty good track record of providing incentive programs as developing the technologies. We're happy to share that and hopefully make this idea more comfortable and more palatable to all of you. We are also, citizens of Portland are very active in doing this through incentives we've given them to, in their own homes, to use both gray and rainwater. So we feel like this is just another direction for the proper environmental stewardship of the state, and we're happy to support you in any way we can. Thank you very much, and happy to answer any questions if you have them.
Mr. Chair, I have just one question to request. That's okay. For a mic, anyway. Can you provide us with, or can you tell me where I can get a hold of one of those California guides?
I'd be happy to provide you one. Not a problem. December of 1994, it's allowed anywhere in the state of California to use gray water on a subsurface irrigation distribution system. And it's you have to think of it much like we use septic systems now for human waste, and these are just only 12 inches or so below the surface. They're sometimes pressurized. But what they were finding in California during the drought is that they were losing the very expensive trees and mature landscaping. And so it was just a very no-nonsense approach to using water. And as was mentioned by DEQ, this is very common in a lot of the southwest parts of the country already.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Barnes.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Aker. Did I understand you correctly to say that there's currently a lot of gray water use in the city of Portland?
We're working with the Plumbing Bureau in the city of Portland right now to get some demonstration projects. There's not a lot yet, but there's a lot of rainwater harvesting going on. That's a very simple and direct way to conserve potable water. And gray water, of course, is a little touchier, and it needs a little closer review and maybe a little bit tighter regulatory approach. But we are working with a system now where in a residence where the gray water is collected in a cistern in the basement, pumped back up, and used to flush the toilets. And as long as this stays within the house, then it's not an issue for DEQ.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, can I just make one clarification as well?
Yes. Same thing, though.
Thank you. One of the reasons we brought this forward is because there are some demonstration projects going on, but we really want to take a look at how we can use this more broadly. And there's also a difference between, as Mr. Akers has pointed out, collecting rainwater and using it to irrigate your own garden versus having a dual system pipe where you could actually use it internally. And there's not, as far as I know, not that much of the latter going on, probably more of the former, and partially because it's been costly. So that's part of some of the things that we're going to be looking at. Have you done any cost analysis for the city of Portland, for instance? I know that you're now not using Bull Run water to irrigate a lot of your parks, and how much that saves the city. I haven't seen those studies. Do you have?
The Water Bureau probably has them. Our Office of Sustainable Development hasn't been that closely tied into the infrastructure. I'm working on basically a stormwater task force, and we're starting to do that between the bureaus. But up until now, that's kind of the cost issues I'd have to defer to the Water Bureau.
Okay.
Chair Jensen, Representative Dingfelder, I'll find out what we know about that at this point and let you all know.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Other questions?
Thank you
very much.
Thank you.
Kathy Van Atta and Matt Blevins.
Yeah.
If you would.
That's great.
Sure. Chair Jensen, members of the committee, for the record, Matt Blevins, Legislative Affairs Director with the Oregon Environmental Council. Oregon Environmental Council supports 3047. Wastewater reuse is a good public policy. Wastewater reuse conserves water, essentially providing Oregonians with a new source of water for uses other than drinking water. By rerouting wastewater back into the environment, it contributes to the environment in water quality and also benefits fish and wildlife habitat. It's an environmentally and economically effective means for dealing with wastewater. We think this bill will help to develop a statewide wastewater reuse program and lay the groundwork for that. If there's any concerns about this type of policy, OEC would just say that, you know, there's obviously concerns about the health and environmental concerns, but we think generally you can address these things, and this helps to lay the groundwork to make sure that that's going to happen. So we think this bill's good and should move forward. With that, take any questions.
Thank you, Matt. Kathy?
For the record, Catherine Venata, Governmental Affairs Manager of the Northwest Pulp and Paper Association. Today I'd like to talk about the effects of developing a statewide policy on this type of an issue to the industrial community. If you look at Section 1, Paragraph 1, it declares a statewide policy. And then if you look at Paragraph 5 on Page 2, we define wastewater reuse means the recycling of treated wastewater derived from domestic and industrial sources for beneficial use. My question is about the legislative intent about what is an industrial source and what is a beneficial use as defined, since we're not referencing any current statute. Are we talking about beneficial use for improvement? Are we talking about protection of a designated beneficial use in our streams currently? And I think that that type of a situation needs to be addressed when we're talking about this. We would also assert that the pulp and paper industry in Oregon, and especially in the Willamette Valley, is a large user, recycler, and reuser of water that returns our water in stream, and that we would like to make sure that this does not create a conflict for industrial users who return their water in stream by declaring a policy of the state that they want to encourage wastewater reuse. Some people and industrial facilities and the use of their water who use large amounts do not have the option of not returning their water to in-stream. And I would just like to see that as we go forward, that we're included in any work group and that we strike a balance and understand what type of beneficial uses we're talking about, whether we're talking about designated beneficial uses that are in our streams currently are a beneficial use, meaning that we're going to conserve water. Thank you.
Thank you, Kathy. And questions? Appreciate your testimonies, and you should raise an interesting question that we'll have to answer before we proceed on. I'd like to make note that the Metropolitan Wastewater Management Commission has offered written testimony on House Bill 3047. Which you have, I think, in your packets, members of the committee, and that should be entered as testimony for the record.
We'll see if you get one.
And with that, we're going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3047, open the public hearing on House Bill 2976.
House Bill 2976 directs Water Resource Commission to establish schedule of fees assessed on water right holders. Specifies that fees collected are to be used for protection and restoration of waters of the state. This has prior referral to Ways and Means.
Okay, we have this, I think, is your bill too.
Yeah, but I'm going to ask Greg Myers from Water Watch to come up and
okay.
Give a quick background on that.
We're going to call Doug Myers, and is it Bob Hunter? Is that right? Yeah. From Water Watch to explain this bill to us. And
thank you.
Sure, I'll do it first.
And as we indicated, we're doing pretty good on the time. We got three bills now in 45 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I am Doug Myers, representing Water Watch, and thank you for the hearing on the bill. And I will introduce Bob Hunter, who will identify himself and give the testimony. Thank you.
Thank you, Doug. Mr. Hunter.
Chair Jensen, members of the committee, really appreciate an opportunity to testify on behalf of House Bill 2976. It's a bill that would require water users. My name is Bob Hunter. I'm a staff attorney for Water Watch of Oregon. Water Watch is a nonprofit river conservation organization dedicated to protection and restoration of natural flows in Oregon. We have over 900 members throughout the state. and we're here today and appreciate the opportunity to testify on behalf of House Bill 2976. It's a bill that would require water users to pay a fee for the water they take from Oregon's rivers and streams. The bill provides that the fees be used to cover the cost of important water planning and management functions of the Water Resources Department and Commission, from basin planning to water masters to administering the in-stream water rights program. Water in Oregon belongs to the public. Currently, the state does not charge anything for the actual use of this public resource. Users only pay a one-time water right application fee, but once they get a water right, they do not pay any fee for the actual water they use over time. In addition, there currently is little incentive to use water efficiently because it is free. Payment of a fee will encourage more efficient use of this valuable resource and will encourage use for higher economic and social values. Other state assets are managed through a use of a fee. State forest lands through timber sales, state range lands through grazing permits, state fish and wildlife through fish and hunting licenses, state parks through users' fees. There's millions of dollars of revenue that come into the state through fees related to these state assets. The water in Oregon's rivers belongs to the people of Oregon, just as our state forests and parks do. It is unthinkable that someone could harvest timber on publicly owned land without paying for it. Similarly, people who take water from Oregon's waterways should reimburse the public for the privilege to use this scarce and important public resource. The great demands on the water resources of this state from thousands of water right diversions have placed an ever-increasing burden on the state's water resource agencies and has increased the need for greater planning and improved water management and to meet current and future water needs. At a time when Oregon is facing a budget crisis and struggling to adequately fund its natural resources agencies, this bill could go a long way toward funding important planning, management, and enforcement programs of the Water Resources Department. These programs are critical to protecting both Oregon's rivers and rights of water right holders themselves. It is only fair that water users benefiting from the use of this valuable public resource help defray some of the costs to Oregon taxpayers that the state's management and administration of their water rights is costing. We can no longer afford not to treat water as the valuable resource it is. And we urge you to support House Bill 2976. I will mention that there are, with our testimony, is a list of proposed amendments to the bill. Those are fairly straightforward and self-explanatory. It's intended that the fee be an annual fee and apply to all water right rights and not just permits. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions?
Question?
Forrest.
Thank you. Either Mr. Myers or Mr. Hunter, realizing that you will be working or wishing to consult or have or direct the Water Resources Commission establish this fee, what would you speculate this annual fee would be for water users?
I don't know what the annual fee would be, but what we have across the state are thousands of individual water diversions which have a certain quantity attached to their water right. So it's a cost what the Water Resources Commission would have to do by rule is analyze sort of the budgetary needs of the Department of the Commission to carry out those important state functions and then take a look at the water rights of record and see how to spread that across the board to all the users. And that's why we have a process to establish it by rule so that can be looked at closely.
Quick follow-up. In the terms of Representative Schaffler, do you have a ballpark?
I do not.
Neither does Oregon.
Forgive me.
Forgive me, Mr.
That's another committee.
And Mr. Chair, as a corollary to that, we've submitted testimony from Gretchen Oosterhout of Eagle Point, and she points out that all government entities have to measure and report their water use, which includes municipalities and irrigation districts. So that's currently in place.
Thank you for that comment again. And let the record show that you do have printed testimony from Gretchen Oosterhout, and that should become part of the record at this point.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And we'd like to have Roger Bachman and John, is it Frewing?
Thank you.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
For the record, I'm Roger Bachman, a former member of the Water Resources Commission from 1990 to 1994. I served on the commission for 4 years, and during my service on the commission, I advocated for a water use fee and accompanying measurement of water use, but was unable to persuade either enough commissioners or the then director, Martha Pagel, or Governor Roberts' staff of its desirability. In fact, I think that your administrator, Pete Test, was one of the people who did not think that was a good idea, or at least his supporters. I would support this bill, but would rather advocate a different approach, which would rely on financial incentives to persuade water users to both measure and conserve their use. It would work like this. Every water right holder would be charged an annual water use fee based on either its paper right or its actual use as measured by an approved measurement device. Such a meter would measure both the rate and the totalized duty of water use. The proceeds of such a fee would be more acceptable to water users if the funds were used in the watersheds from which they were collected. After a very small administrative accounting expense at the Water Resources Department, a high percentage, say at least 80%, of the collected fees would be returned to the watershed councils in the basins from which they originated. The remaining percentage of fees would be allocated by OWEB to watersheds with very large and urgent needs. In other words, a local watershed could easily get more than 80% back. The approved uses for the return fees could be managed with certain sideboards, which would be chosen by the Water Resources Commission. The sideboards could start out with emphasis on watershed restoration and later on move to supporting the pay of assistant watermasters to better manage the system. Just those examples. Such a system would have several advantages. First, users would respond to the financial incentive. I know of many large water users who have told me that they closely watch the electric bills for operating their pumps rather than whether their use is within their water rights. This is true even where the use is measured by a meter. If you want names, I can supply them. Two, I think there would be very strong resistance to sending the collected fees to Salem to support the work of the Water Resources Department. It would be seen as a bureaucratic black hole. However, I think there would be better acceptance if the money were returned to the watersheds of origin for use as decided by local representatives on the watershed councils. For example, farmers in the Anthony Creek and North Powder watersheds believe that there ought to be a storage facility there to supply late season irrigation water. But the stream flows are not measured, and neither the county nor the state has the resources to install a flow meter and make the 7 to 10 years of record that would be required. Such fee monies could be used for that kind of purpose. Number three, such a fee system could be tried out on a pilot basis in one or two watersheds before being adopted for application statewide. For example, the Deschutes Resource Conservancy is contemplating taxing the landowners in that basin to pay for the many capital and operating improvements which will be required to protect flows in the Deschutes while still permitting continued population growth. That constituency might find a water use fee acceptable. And finally, four, the amount of the fee would be set by the Water Resources Commission in proceedings which allow plenty of public participation to ensure balance and fairness. Now, to answer Representative Flores' question, ballpark question, back during my commission service, one of the senior staff people calculated that a fee of $1 per acre foot levied on only the largest users would yield about $12 million, as I recall. My informal studies of the economics of water use indicated to me that a fee of that size would not be a very large burden on most users. For example, I know of a ranch owner in the Powder River watershed who allows his manager a credit toward his profit calculation of $100 per acre on the riparian area which is fenced off to prevent damage from grazing. His name is Wilson. And in other words, when he proposed to fence off the riparian area on Anthony Creek, his managers, who have a profit incentive, objected. So he granted them a credit of $100 per acre, and it's worked very well. And if you visit Anthony Creek, you'll see how well that has recovered. Thank you. I'd be pleased to take any questions.
Thank you very much, Mr. Bachman. Appreciate your service on the Water Resource Commission at that time, and appreciate your testimony here.
Thank
today.
You.
Please,
Mr. Fruinger.
Fruinger, yes.
Ladies and gentlemen, my name is John Fruing of 7110 Southwest Lola Lane in Tigard, Oregon, 97223. My background and interest in Oregon water issues stems from 6 years of service on the Oregon Water Resources Commission from 1994 to year 2000. I'm presently retired but spent most of my career as an engineer and manager for Portland General Electric Company in Portland. At my very first introduction to the Water Resources Commission in 1994, I was taken aside by Jim Howland, who was then a Water Resource Commission member. He was leaving the Water Resource Commission at that time, and he told me, "This is a frustrating task. We don't know who has water rights and how much they're using. Any successful management of Oregon waters will need better records of users and how much water they use." Jim Howland, you may know or may not know, was one of the founders of CH2M Hill, one of Oregon's largest engineering firms with worldwide operations today. In my 6 years of service on the Water Resource Commission, I found the same situation. Over the past decade, there has been a considerable effort by the Water Resources Department staff to upgrade the records of water right ownership, which goes with title to the land, but maintaining those records up to date consumes significant personnel and financial resources and is often not even accurate. My personal vignette involves trying to find out who owns the water right near the abandoned town of Cochrane in western Washington County. This water right was originally developed by the railroad, which was built in the early 1910s from Forest Grove to Tillamook. The water right was used for replenishing the coal and wood-fired boilers of the steam engines, pulling the trains, and was near the top of the Coast Range. Such engines have long been abandoned by the railroad, and the property ownership has changed several times. I visited the diversion site deep in the woods to find some rusty remnants of a small dam and evidence of a pipe which flowed downhill to the railroad. It was broken, with trees growing in and around it, trees some 40 feet high, indicating that use stopped at least 50 years ago. An annual fee, as proposed in HB 2976, would have maintained proper ownership records and probably resulted in abandonment of the water right years ago, yet it remains on the books, limiting others' use of this same water. My personal observation is that the Oregon Water Resources Department is pushed to the extreme in managing Oregon water resources. Over the past decade, the number of water rights has increased by some 20,000, yet the field staff at the Water Resources Department has been reduced by 30%. The number of stream flow measuring stations maintained by the Water Resources Department has been decreased. These trends suggest to me that the state may be heading toward ugly conflicts over water use. We've had some of those in the past. I can see some in the future, caused by lack of information and preemptive corrective action by the Water Resources Department. The annual fee proposed by HB 2976 can fund necessary administrative and management action. In repeated appearances before the Water Resource Commission, which involved contested issues, the staff of the Water Resource Department was necessarily in the position of saying, "We don't know," when they were asked if a certain water use had impact on either others' water rights or in-stream water rights. Proceeding to grant new water rights in the face of unknown stream flow conditions is unwise and, in my opinion, likely to result in future liability of the state for water which doesn't exist. The measurement requirements of HB 2977, which is your next bill, can begin to limit such liability when connected to the management actions funded by HB 2976. In other states where water is highly valued, such measurement is commonplace. Hence, it is simply a feature of modern civilization that water measurement be conducted regularly. I wholeheartedly support the passage of 2976 and 2977. In the last couple days, I have reviewed the proposed amendments by WaterWatch and support such clarifications. An annual fee for users of state water would additionally reduce the draw by the Water Resources Department on the state general fund, which is obviously an important issue in the legislature today. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Rui. Other questions? Thank you, gentlemen. Appreciate your testimony, too, and your service to the water resource. At this point, we have Adam Sussman. From the Department of Water Resources, and with all of the publicity you've just received, I don't know what you're going to have to say. You have written testimony. Please summarize.
Yes. Good morning again. For the record, Adam Sussman. I'm the legislative coordinator with the Water Resources Department, and thank you for the opportunity to present testimony on House Bill 2976. Before I get into my testimony, I just want to note that I think Mr. Furling, I think it was, brought up a very excellent point that identifying and maintaining the current ownership of water rights and collecting the fees as proposed in this bill would, in fact, be a significant workload on the department, which would have an associated fiscal impact. The department's been before this committee on a number of occasions to talk about both our staffing and budget constraints. We've been before you with our fee increase bill, House Bill 2268, and in the same vein, we have also been here supporting House Bill 2551, the receipts authority. So I think it's been made clear to the committee that we're looking for ways to bolster our resources. I think we've also talked that the department relies on general fund dollars for almost 75% of our funding, and we recognize that in the long run we need to look for ways to diversify our budget. A water use fee or a water account maintenance fee may be one alternative to helping the department bolster its resources to carry out its programs, and we'd be interested in continuing a dialogue on that option. We do think, however, that such a dialogue would have to include a broad and diverse range of stakeholders and would take some time to flesh out the issues and how something like that might work. In any event, the department does support the policy objective of this bill, which is helping the department to find other fund revenue to cover the cost of its programs, programs that are essential to Oregon's economic development and environmental activities in the state. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions for Adam? Okay. I have next Katie Fast, Oregon Cattlemen's Dean Wilkerson, and Richard Kosasan, if you all would come up, and you've heard my comments to others about time is of the essence, and so with that, would you start, please, Katie?
Once again, for the record, Katie Fast, Oregon Cattlemen. We are here in opposition of House Bill 2978. Our concern is regarding the allocation of water and permitted use of water is for beneficial use. And the department and statutes have shown that there's a benefit to the public in economic development, municipality, and also conservation use of water. Currently, water users pay for the delivery and maintenance of their delivery systems for water. However, in this bill, not all beneficial uses are charged an assessment. So we have concerns that people using water for drinking purposes, household purposes, and then also for economic development are the ones being charged for all the beneficial use of water. In a time when our state is challenged with economic struggles, this bill just creates a disincentive for doing business in Oregon.
Thank you. Good morning. I'm Jean Wilkinson with the Oregon Farm Bureau. I concur with the comments you just heard from the Cattlemen's Association. The fact of the matter is, without irrigation in the state, you have very little agriculture. And the ability for agriculture community right now, as you know, to absorb additional fees is very limited. So we scrutinize fee increases significantly. I do have a few questions that I did not hear answers to in the prior testimony today. Whether the fee structure would include all uses of water, including surface and groundwater uses, whether it would include municipality uses, and whether it would include all uses of water, including hydroelectric facilities and their uses of water. That would certainly generate huge amounts of money, potentially to fund the entire state. And also, I have additional questions with regard to how the fee structure would be conducted. We would require in a bill like this to see, instead of leaving it up to the Water Resources Department and the Commission, we would like to see a fee structure established in statute to give us a little bit of certainty as to how it would work. So we have these significant questions that would need to be answered before we would even be able to substantially consider this bill. Until those questions are answered, we would oppose the bill as written. Thank you.
Thank you. Richard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Richard Kosasan, Water for Life. I concur with previous two speakers. A couple of questions. One of the previous speakers said a general fee might generate $12 million. In light of today's economy, I would think it would not be wise to take $12 million out of Oregon's ag economy. It is not doing well. It is not done well. And a $12 million reduction probably would not be beneficial. Specifically with respect to the bill, Section 2, you'll notice that the fee is to be assessed against basically all individuals other than in-stream rights. I think that is disproportionately established. And then specifically with regard to subsection 3, you'll notice that if a person appropriating water under a permit fails to pay a fee required under this section, the department may institute proceedings to cancel the permit. So if someone in the ag community faced a severe downturn for a year or two, was not able to pay the fee, they could be subject to a cancellation of their water right. That would, for all intents and purposes, would end another business in Oregon, and I think that is ill-advised. With that, thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Kosas. And questions? Representative Cruz.
Yeah, I was a little bit disturbed when Gene was talking about trying to find a way to make this fee viable. I think this is a terrible idea myself. I think Richard had a good point. If we're going to assess a fee, let's assess a fee on the public good for what we're being forced to leave in stream also. But, you know, to do this with the assumption that the ag industry just overuses water because it doesn't cost them anything is absurd. You don't do that to a crop. You give a crop what it needs. If you give it more, you hurt the crop. I mean, anybody that knows agriculture knows that we work very hard and spend a lot of money to make sure that we're using water appropriately and using what we need and not overusing. So I think some of the premise behind this is incredibly faulty. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Cruz. I was wondering about a model program, say Bull Run as a trial program, and we'll go from there. I see the Water Resource Commission, and, you know, X nodding approval on that. Thank you very much for your testimony. I appreciate it. I have one last testimony on this, and excuse me, Jeffrey Key, is that correct?
Thank you, Chair, Committee. My name is Jeffrey Key, and I'm descendant of ranchers, loggers, and teachers. I'm a fourth-generation Oregonian. My family does have water rights in Oregon. I'm just here to support this bill. After its people, I believe water is the most valuable resource in Oregon. We all have a connection to a waterway in Oregon. I support user fees. It is my belief that people, individuals, or corporations that use a resource should support the management of that resource. When Salvi's Island introduced a parking pass program, I supported it, and after it was implemented, the users had much more influence on its management. When the Forest Service created a Forest Service pass system, I thought it was a good idea. People who do not benefit from forest use should not have to bear the same costs as users who do. Users are benefiting, and it is equitable for them to pay a more proportional share of the management cost. I see this bill running along the same lines. Oregon has fees for timber harvest, commercial fishing licenses, and algae harvesting. Water use should not be any different. Water is very, very valuable, and for 160 years, users in Oregon have not had to pay for its use. It is time for water users to begin to pay more and be more conscious of their water use. Oregon's water laws are old and not effective for supporting good management. The Water Resources Department does not have an effective enforcement arm for a variety of reasons. We need to show our support for enforcing current laws and raise awareness of water use in our waterways. This bill is a first step in a long walk that Oregon needs to take in order to ultimately protect the public interest. I urge you to support this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Keith. Appreciate your testimony. Are there questions? With that, then, seeing or having no one else signed up to testify on this bill, we will close the public hearing on House Bill 2977 and we're closing the public hearing on 2976, opening a public hearing on 2977.
House Bill 2977 requires all water right users to measure amounts of water withdrawn or stored. Applies to new water users on and after July 1st, 2003. Applies to existing water users on January 1st, 2008. Allows the Water Resource Commission to require water users to report water use measurements. Declares emergency effective on passage.
Elder Bill. My okay. Lord, woman, what are you...
Are we starting with, again, Doug Meyer and Bob Hunter with Water Watch?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'm Doug Myers, representing Water Watch, and with me today is Bob Hunter of Water Watch, and he, after identifying himself for the record, he will present our testimony. Thank you.
Good morning again, Bob.
Good morning. My name is Bob Hunter. I'm a staff attorney for Water Watch of Oregon. Chair Jensen, members of the committee, again, appreciate the opportunity to testify on behalf of House Bill 2977, which is a bill to strengthen water use measurement practices in the state of Oregon. In brief, the bill would require people who use surface or groundwater under any permit, certificate, registration statement, or license to install a device allowing measurement of their water use by the beginning of 2008 and to maintain the device in good working order. Increasing conflicts over water, burgeoning demand for limited water supplies, water transfers, in-stream flow protection, federal laws, water right adjudications, smart economical farm management, all of these things require water use measurement and reporting. Our entire water allocation framework is premised on the principle that a water user is limited to what can be used beneficially. There is no way to effectively discern whether water use is wasteful, inflated, or reasonable without water measurement. Water use measurement is the cornerstone of effective water management and efficient water use. Without water measurement, individual farmers and the state do not have essential data in which to appropriately plan for the future, carry out current management responsibilities, or improve water use efficiencies. All governmental entities, which includes municipalities and irrigation districts, and nearly all new water right users are required to measure and/or report their water use. Yet, thousands of pre-existing users are not yet required to measure how much they take from Oregon streams. Thus, the state has no accurate way to determine how much water is being taken out of our rivers or from the thousands of individual points of diversion. This leaves state officials, water users, and the public without good information about water use in many river basins and impairs the ability of water users and water masters to ensure that users are operating within their legal limits. It is not fair that some water users are required to measure and others are not. All water users should be accountable for their use, and it is difficult to be accountable when there is no way of easily determining how much water is being used. By strengthening water measurement, this bill increases accountability, improves water use efficiency, and supports good stewardship. In terms of increased accountability, neither the water user nor the state knows if water is being used within the legal limits of a user's right without measurement. A group of irrigators, state officials, conservation, and tribal representatives in the Yakima River Basin got together and came up with a water measurement policy. They urged measurement reporting for all water users in that basin, and the group unanimously recommended that federal and state agencies should cooperate in establishing an effective water use metering program with the effective deterrence to noncompliance. The agencies should give this program the highest priority as it protects those water users who comply with their water rights from harm by those who may not, and puts them on an equal economic footing. Allowing noncompliance to go undetected and unpunished puts those who comply to an economic disadvantage, and this promotes more widespread noncompliance. Again, measurement also helps with improved water use efficiency. Water use measurement enables active water management. By knowing how much water is actually being diverted, the user can adjust diversions to meet legal diversion limits and also to manage diversions more carefully for what the crop needs are at any particular time. WaterWatch did some work in Oregon's Wood River Basin where we measured diversions, found some diversions outside of the legal limits, reported to the state, and the state issued headgate notices. And we found just the simple act of putting in measurement devices decreased diversions at a number of points and increased stream flow, making more water available for all uses. I've attached to our testimony a summary of our report on our work on the Wood and the Water Resource Department's confirmation of the benefits of measuring devices in that case. 20 to 30 cubic feet per second was found to be added to some stretches of the Wood River in that case. Finally, measurement is the basis for good stewardship. In order for the state to fulfill its water management responsibilities and water planning functions, it is essential that water use be measured. This data is necessary for informed decision-making and good stewardship. In the Oregon Plan, the Oregon Plan promotes the state's efforts to strengthen enforcement of water laws and the collection of water use data. These are basic fundamental management tools and both rely on accurate measurement of water use. As stated in the Oregon Plan, reducing and eliminating illegal water use increases stream flows and allows other water right users to benefit from the flows. And again, though the plan, Oregon Plan calls for improved water measurement and management, the Water Resource Department has been reluctant to exercise this authority very actively. In sum, water management is a basic, common sense tool that is necessary to provide good data on water use throughout the state, to help water users stay within their legal limits and use water more efficiently, and to help the state carry out its water management responsibilities. These are important benefits essential to current and future management of a precious and valuable public resource. We urge the committee to approve House Bill 2977. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Questions?
I do, Mr. Chair.
Yes.
This whole issue is very new to me, and it's somewhat perplexing to me. As you mentioned that through the Oregon Plan, it calls for improved water measurement, that the Water Resources Department has not used that authority very actively. Why is that?
Well, that's a good question. It's actually quite baffling that water being such a precious resource and the fact that we have more and more conflicts over water in this state and we can expect more in the future, it's really time to kind of bring things up into the 21st century and have in place a basic tool that we need to manage this resource. And I think there just hasn't been the political will to get the job done and move ahead there. There is some cost, of course, to the user to install measurement devices. We therefore have encouraged in the bill that funding sources be looked at in that regard. But for many of the users who have pumps and pipes, it's a simple and inexpensive job to put in measurement devices. For those who use flood irrigation and open diversions, the cost can run into a few thousand dollars. So.
That might be a more appropriate question for the department when they come up. Since
thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate that.
other questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Next, we want to bring Roger Bachman, John Frewing, and I'd like Adam Sussman, if he would, to come up with this group.
I'll pass.
Okay.
Representative Jensen, John Frewing. I similarly think my earlier remarks went to the question of measurement as well as administrative.
I thought maybe they did, but I wanted
to. So I have no further testament.
Okay.
So it's Adams.
They're all by himself.
Thank you very much. Good morning again for the record. Adam Sussman, legislative coordinator with the Water Resources Department. And thank you for the opportunity to present testimony on House Bill 2977. I have provided some written testimony that gives a lot more detail than I'll give now. The department does support strategic targeted efforts to improve water use measurement and appreciates the opportunity in our written testimony to go into great detail about some of the programs that we're engaged in right now to improve that. I would like to go first directly to Representative Tomei's question, and I think if you get into the written testimony, what you'll find is that the department is engaging in sort of a more focused and targeted effort to improve water use measurement around the state. And one of the things that we have been engaged in with both the department and our commission since 1999 is a strategy to improve all of our water measurement activities, not just measurement from out of the stream, but measurement in the stream, measurement from wells, the working up of stream flow records. And one of the things that we have been doing is focusing on the largest diversions in the state and the diversions in the watersheds where there's the greatest biological concern and the greatest opportunity for stream flow improvement. And since 1999, we have inventoried over 2,000 of those diversions and are currently working with those water users in more of a collaborative effort to get them to install water measurement devices. And so we've really taken, I think, more of a focused approach. And I think I'll step back now and hopefully come back to that. Just to give you an idea of the scope of House Bill 2977, this, of course, affects all holders of surface water, groundwater, reservoirs, registrations, limited licenses, exempt water uses. This would involve over 100,000 surface water points of diversion, over 20,000 groundwater permit points of appropriation, over 13,000 reservoirs, and probably somewhere over 200,000 exempt uses of groundwater. So it's a huge, huge task that's laid out here in this bill. The department would face an immediate workload if this bill was passed to provide public information and technical assistance to the water users. So there would be a fiscal impact for the department associated with this bill.
Mr. Chair.
Tell me.
Adam, could you repeat those figures? Are they anywhere in your testimony?
Yes, they are.
Okay, thank you. That's fine.
Yeah, I just, again, Mr. Chair, Representative Tomei, I just wanted to lay out the scope of the bill.
Thank you.
I also wanted to mention, and again, this is in our testimony, that it should be made clear that current law does provide the department several tools related to water measurement and reporting, and that public entities are required to measure and report their use. A water master, through a formal process, can require a water user to install a measurement device so that he or she can manage the water. We can also require measurement devices through an administrative rule process where we designate both what's called a serious water management area or a critical groundwater area. And we also, of course, have the authority to require measurement and reporting in water use permits. we believe that the key to the success of any measurement strategy is going to be funding opportunities to install and maintain those measurement devices. And to that end, in the last legislative session, at the request of the department, Representative Jensen sponsored legislation, House Bill 2713, to establish a water measurement cost share fund to help pay for these kinds of devices. And although no funds were appropriated for the fund, we're still looking hard to find them.
Mr. Chair?
Please.
Quick question. The previous bill had a funding mechanism. Couldn't we look at that as a potential way to fund measurement? I mean, there's a nexus there between, you know, charging for use of water and funding measurement. Have you considered looking at that? And there were gentlemen here from that used to serve on the Water Resources Commission. Do you know if that's been discussed at the agency?
Chair Jensen, Representative Dingfelder, I mean, I would agree that there would appear to be a nexus between both the fee bill and the requirement to measure, but the fee bill, in fact, is pretty specific about the programs that would be funded. And so if we wanted to maybe improve the nexus, I think there's some opportunity there, yes.
Thank you.
I would agree. I think the bottom line is that measurement devices are expensive to install. They're expensive to maintain. And on top of that, I think you'll hear that water users are not universally persuaded that measurement is in their self-interest and view this requirement as an additional unnecessary burden. And so what the department has done, and again, which is outlined in our written testimony, is as an alternative to sort of a broad blanket regulatory approach, we have developed and are implementing an approach that focuses limited department resources on the largest diverters in the basins with the greatest needs. And we're hoping that through collaboration and investing the water users in the benefit of measurement, that we, in fact, will be successful in getting the biggest bang for our buck and getting most of the important diversions metered and measured. Thank you.
Are there any questions from the committee? Mr. Sussman? Adam, I have a quick question regarding, I mean, one of the things that strikes me as the fairness issue here is that certain people are required, or certain parties are required, to measure, and others aren't. And I'm just wondering if you can address that, because, and I'm supportive of if we can find ways to fund it, and I understand and certainly sympathize that there are costs associated. We went through the similar thing with Fish Passage. And as you know, ODFW has a fund that landowners can use when improving fish passage on their property. So can you address that? Because I do know we require, for instance, as is stated in your testimony, municipalities and irrigation districts to now pay for water measurement, although there was some assistance for irrigation districts. To me, that's partially an equity issue, and I'm wondering if you can address that.
Representative Dingfelder, members of the committee, yes, there clearly are some fairness issues that I think you have to sort of look at the allocation of water over time, and as we have gotten smarter and wiser and wanting to do better and greater water management, we've sort of upped our approach in terms of requiring measurement and reporting. And again, I think if you look at the statute that requires the public entities to measure and report their use, I mean, that was, I think, both the recognition that they had the resources to do it, number one, and number two, that they were likely, in many cases, users of water that used a lot of water. There, another equity issue is, in the past, in the issuance of permits, we didn't require water measurement for everyday water users, and then in the early 90s as a sort of a department policy for uses over a certain size, we have regularly required both measurement and in some cases reporting. I think we're at the point now, recognizing that inequity, how do you resolve that? And I think what we're saying with our commission is, in terms of going back and recapturing the water rights that have been issued, sure, it would be great to have them all metered and measured, but instead of that sort of blanket approach, we've taken this very sort of strategic approach and said, let's go back and recapture some of the water rights that we've issued and require them to measure. But again, let's go after the big diverters, and let's go after the diverters that are in streams that, together with the Department of Fish and Wildlife, we have identified as having great biological need in terms of fishery resources and opportunities for fish recovery and stream flow recovery. So yes, there's an inequity, and I'm not sure how we can resolve that, but we can at least think smart, and when we're going back to recapture those who haven't had to measure, do it strategically.
Okay. I have one last question, and I'm going to pull up the last folks. Do you have any sense as to what percentage of our state's water resources we now currently measure versus goes unmeasured? And I know you probably have that more of a basin by basin. I mean, do you have, is that something you could provide to the committee on a basin by basin level?
Yeah, Chair Jensen, Representative Dingfelder, I couldn't give you that number off the top of my head, but I can certainly get back to you with some information regarding that.
Thank you so much, Adam.
Okay. With that, we are going to, close the public hearing.
Chair, can I ask one thing?
I'm sorry, we're being called to floor, and we are not being excused.
A number that I offered, and I just wanted to...
Oh, please. We'll reopen the public hearing on House Bill 2977.
Once again, Roger Bachman. Mr. Kosasan said that the $12 million figure that I cited would be taken from agriculture. Well, obviously that's not so, because all users would be measured, and there are many more users than agriculture. So that's one thing. Also, the problem of non-measurement goes back to the establishment of water rights way, way back before the legislation passed that required the measurement. I know a farmer in the Willowdale area of Jefferson County who has a water right that allows him to use 6 acre feet in a season. He can grow 3 cuttings of alfalfa on 1.6 acre feet, which he manages to do. Now, he's doing it right. He would pay a fee on the 1.6 that he actually uses, or if he chose, on the 6 acre feet, which obviously he wouldn't do under my proposal.
I'd have to question the premise made as to the efficiency of measuring and suggest that probably some of the greatest inefficiency that we may have in water use would be found in our cities with the faucets dripping, and we're talking about a system there which already has something of a measuring device on each household. So with that,
we'll
close.
Thank you for allowing me to make that additional.
Yes.
So
the public hearing.
We're going to the floor?
The floor.
Now?
ASAP. You're not excused.
We're going to the floor.
At 10, I think, right? So early.
The committee is adjourned.